Welcome once again to Word on the Hills with me, Gwyn Sheltimer, my co-host Felicity Sidnell-Reed, and our guest this week, Caroline Everson. Each week at this time, we visit with an author, editor, publisher, or playwright from our region. We hope to find out a little about their lives, what they love about their job, and we give them an opportunity to read from their work. This week, we're very pleased to have Caroline Everson with us to talk about her first children's book. Welcome, Caroline.
Thank you very much.
Caroline Everson was born in England and came to Canada with her family as a young child. She lived near Ottawa until 11 and then moved to Port Hope, where she still lives today. She graduated from the University of Western Ontario with a BA in geography and has worked in banking, retail, and advertising and marketing for small businesses while raising three children. She also found time to write. In the past, her work has been published in local newspapers and magazines, and she has won two writing contests with her short fiction. Some of her stories were included in It Ain't Shakespeare, a collection published by Coburg's Pollard Writers Guild in 2004. Caroline's first book sale came in 2007. Ally Runs with the Pack was part of an educational program from Scholastic Canada. Her picture book, Song on the Wind, was published at the end of 2017. It's an end-of-the-day poem, beautifully illustrated by Anne-Marie Bourgeois. So, Caroline, tell us more about your writing. Have you always focused on writing for children?
Originally, it was half children, half adult. I tallied it up, and it was exactly half and half what I had written. More recently, though, it's mostly children.
And any particular age group in children?
No, it varies. This particular one's a picture book, younger children and some young adult.
Okay. Now, you've won some contests with your short fiction. Are you still writing short stories?
I haven't actually done much lately. And before, the book took 2 years from the time I submitted it to the time I was notified that they were buying it. So sometime in that time, I sort of thought, well, this isn't working, and, why bother? Well, then when it sold and, came out and was kind of remarkable, I kind of started again.
Okay, so you think you're going to get some short stories published in the future? Are you going to concentrate
there? I'm working more on children's books. So, yes, I'm still working on some of those, yes.
So where do you find your inspiration?
My own childhood for Song on the Wind, my children's childhood, things that happened at school, things that happened to their friends. Yeah, just things that come up every day and sort of think. The one book I'm working on is to do with that it's not cool to read. And, there are some kids for whom that's the case, but really it's not true. It's very cool to read. So
I would agree with you there. Now, you live in Port Hope. Do you ever take inspiration from Port Hope?
Actually, I was thinking about that. I didn't sort of think of it specifically as a setting. However, one of the stories in the book we put together with Pollard Writers Guild, when I reread it, I realized that, yes, I worked at Turk's Restaurant when I was at high school, and there's a waitress from a restaurant, and there's the small town politics and that sort of thing. So, yeah, it does show up.
It creeps in there, whether you like it or not.
That's right.
Now, do you only write fiction? Do you keep a journal?
I keep a journal. I write both fiction and nonfiction. Recently, probably, I was going to say more fiction, but it's probably still both. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've kept a journal for years and years, sometimes more off than on, but it's always been there. So, yeah, I get a lot of it from there, going back through it.
What keeps you writing a journal? What's good
therapy
about that?
Therapy. When my head is spinning in the middle of the night and I can't sleep and I don't know what to do with it, I go and write it down. And I spill it onto the page and it clears out of my head and it helps everything.
And then do you ever go back and extract it for stories?
Yeah, I mine it for nuggets. That's what I do. I go back through them and mark the bits that resonate with me. And then later on I'll go over them and see if there's anything useful there.
Do you write every day? Do you have a writer's regimen at all?
Not really. I try sometimes. Sometimes I will. Sometimes I'll get up every morning at 5:30 and I'll write my 3 pages and then I've done it. And other times I get up and I go for a walk or, it just doesn't feel right. So, sometimes not.
And what would you, If you had to give one piece of advice to a writer or to someone wanting to write, what would that be?
Probably keep at it. Even though it feels like you're writing drivel and it's absolutely useless, you might go back 10 years later and think, oh, well, wait a minute, I could take this little piece and I could do something with it. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I would say just stick at it.
Yeah. And keep your journals.
Yeah, although I'm wondering, it's going to be a lot of space taken up.
No, I think they're gold journals. They have all sorts of things in them
they
that
do,
you can
actually,
go back
yes,
to.
Yeah.
In fact, the journals that I've kept, I got to the point where I would color code them. I'd go through them with highlighters, and if it was something I figured I could use for poetry, it would get yellow, and if it was for fiction, I'd mark it with pink or something, so I didn't have to.
And there's a whole like cache of treasure then that you've got, right,
to
work
absolutely.
With. Yeah.
What are you going to read for us today?
Actually, I hadn't decided, but I think I will now. I'll read the one that won the competition that's in It Ain't Shakespeare, which is the one the Pollard Writers Guild put together. It was self-published. Good advice. Old Joey was a regular, you know. Came in every morning, same time. Well, not every morning. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. 9:30, regular as clockwork. Always winked at me and called me skinny. Can you imagine calling me skinny? Always had toast and coffee, every time. He'd shuffle in through the door, smelling like fish. Scruffy old thing. Always wore dark green trousers. You know those cotton work trousers? Them and a red plaid shirt. Same one every time. Looked the same anyway. That and rubber boots. Like a uniform. Old Joey's fishing uniform. Like I said, he was scruffy. Hair all messy. Not too long, just all over the place. Always needed a shave and a bath. We never knew what it was he did when he wasn't warming a stool at the Royal Grill. Fishing for sure, but a man couldn't spend all day and night fishing, could he? Well, some could, I guess, but we always figured old Joey spent the night under a bridge somewhere, holed up with a bottle in a paper bag. Harry and Luke said he spent his days fishing off the end of the pier, except from 9:30 to 10:30, then he was in here. Never saw him Thursdays or Fridays. Luke Thomas figured old Joey had another fishing spot up the coast a piece, some place where the weekends were a little quieter. We spent a lot of time speculating about Joey when he wasn't here, me and the regulars, you know, Luke and Harry Crumwall and Frankie what comes in from the bakery and the rest of them. Of course, we'd shut up when old Joey shuffled in, and then it was, "Hiya, Joe," and "Hi yourself, skinny." So Joe was sitting here, right there on that stool. That's his stool. So he was sitting here when we got to talking about that big shot CEO coming to town. You know, the one that owns Kensington Industries? J.P. Kensington himself, if you can believe it. Coming here. Well, not to the Royal Grill. Not enough room here. No, they had the ballroom over at the Seabreeze Hotel. The company wanted to make a charitable donation, and we had to give presentations to tell J.P. how we thought he should spend it. Lucy Fairfield planned to do her usual and extol the virtues of lavish horticultural displays in a hotbed of tourism such as this. Knowing Lucy, she probably figured on having Kensington Industries spelled out in multicolored petunias. The big cheese himself, Mayor Smithington, had the town communications department working overtime on a fancy audiovisual presentation to convince old J.P. to pour money into harbor renovations. As far as I'm concerned, you might as well pour the money right into the harbor. An old pier is an old pier, whether you slap a coat of paint on it or not. So who got the honor of making the presentation on behalf of the Bluebell Foundation? Yours truly, Maggie Tanner, waitress extraordinaire. Well, what could I say? We do need the money, and it's such a good cause. With that bake table we ran last spring, we made enough for new swings and a slide at the park. And the school has a ramp now, so Billy Hawthorne's mum doesn't have to lift his wheelchair up the steps anymore. So we thought, why not? Helping out our children is every bit as important as flower beds and fancy piers. More important, if you ask me. They picked me to tell J.P. that. Well, I didn't really mind. I mean, I can talk the hind leg off anybody, can't I? But this was J.P. Kensington. It's not like chatting to customers while you deliver their ham and cheese on rye and refill their coffee. He's been on television, for crying out loud. So like I was saying, old Joey's sitting here listening to all this, and I was all worried. I knew what I had to say, but I just got so nervous thinking of talking face to face with such an important person. Just pretend you're talking to me, skinny. That's what he said. Just pretend you're talking to me. Well, I looked at him. Joe, I said, this isn't some grubby fisherman who comes in for toast and coffee every morning. This is a big shot CEO, a chief executive officer. I can't just talk to him like I talk to you, you know. That's what I told him. I know he meant well, but really it's not the same thing at all. You never know, said old Joey. This JP might just be a regular guy who likes fishing. Right, and I'm Marilyn Monroe. So there we were on the day, all packed into the ballroom at the Seabreeze. Must have been half the town there. Smithington was all decked out in his mayoral regalia, flashing his friend of the people smile like his charm alone could convince anyone that our old peer was a worthy cause. His assistant was busy setting up the screen and the projector and all that. Lucy Fairfield was carting about a flip chart with detailed diagrams of enough floral displays to beautify the center of town, the outlying housing estates, and most of the farms within a 20-mile radius. And there I was. No slideshows, no flip charts, just me. Really, I just had to tell him, didn't I? Tell him about the Bluebell Foundation? Tell him about the things we'd done for the children, the projects we had planned? It struck me then, and I nearly laughed out loud. Here I was taking the advice of that crazy old Joey. Just talk to him, he'd said. All right, I would. I would just talk to him. The ballroom lights dimmed. Those of us who were speaking were told to wait beside the stage. Then Charlie Perkins, he's the manager at the Seabreeze, he got up on the stage and introduced Mr. Joseph P. Kensington himself. So this very elegant, well-dressed man strode across the stage, looked right at me, and he winked at me. J.P. Kensington winked at me. I nearly fell over. It was old Joey, all clean and polished. Can you believe it? It was him all the time. But I'll tell you something. Old Joey's advice was spot on.
And let's hope the Bluebell Foundation got the
I would hope so. So that was first place winner in the 2001 short fiction competition of the Canadian Writers' Journal.
Fabulous. Well, thanks very much, Caroline.
Oh, you're welcome.
We've been talking with Caroline Everson, children's author and short story writer, and we'll hear a little more from her after we take this short break.